KQED.
Well, the Sri Lankan government has declared a state of emergency in the wake of the Easter Sunday suicide bombings, which killed nearly 300 people and injured more than 500. The government is blaming a small local militant group, National Tauhid Jamaat, for the attacks. And officials say the group had the help of an international network. But there has been no claim of responsibility. And Sri Lankan authorities were warned at least 10 days before the bombings, but apparently did not act on the tip. Here is U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on the attacks.
It's heartbreaking that a country which has strived so hard for peace in recent years has been targeted by these terrorists. We mourn the loved ones of the victims, some of whom we can confirm were indeed U.S. citizens. This is America's fight, too.
Joining us now is Sharika Thirangama. She's assistant professor of anthropology at Stanford. Her books include In My Mother's House, Civil War in Sri Lanka. And Professor Thirangama, thank you for joining us. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Michael, though I'm very sad at the circumstances that bring me to your program.
Well, I'm saddened by it, too. It's heartbreaking, really. And what can one say in the wake of all this terrible tragedy, except that it was indeed what we know now, well-coordinated, and a warning came ahead of time and nothing was done. And that is pretty disturbing, too.
Yes, I think it is disturbing. On many levels. One is that there's a clear political failure in Sri Lanka. We've had from last year, we've had a president and a prime minister at war with each other, and the former president of the country, currently the leader of opposition, trying to get back into power through making alliances with the president. So we do have a political failure that clearly these intelligence reports did not reach all of the cabinet. Secondly, I think, to be honest, in Sri Lanka, we're very used to dealing with large-scale acts of terror. The intelligence services are very used to dealing with the LTT, for example, not always in ways that were respect to the human rights of minorities. But nobody was really prepared, I think, for this group that they are mentioning is a very small group.
But a group that has been linked probably to some kind of international network. And the problem, I mean, we've got all of these dreadful, tragic things happening throughout the world now that have religious divisions between them. What happened, of course, in Christchurch, New Zealand, what happened in Pittsburgh, and now this, and of course here in the United States with church bombings. Tell us, if you could, you've got a Buddhist majority there, and there has been probably very little difficulty between Muslims and the Buddhist majority, or for that matter, Muslims against Christians up until now, right?
Well, you know, actually, Michael, it is absolutely true that there's been very little difficulty between Muslims and Christians, but it is not true that there hasn't been difficulty between Buddhists and Muslims. Since the end of the war, we've seen Buddhist extremist groups increasingly turn to target Muslim communities. We've had two anti-Muslim riots in 2013 and 2018. We've had Muslim businesses targeted. And many of us are very frightened that a minority community like Sri Lankan Muslims, who are 8% of the country and who've been targeted endlessly over the last few years, are now going to be swept up in violence against them. There's already been retaliatory attacks against Muslim communities all across Sri Lanka. And for some of us, this is very sad. I'm actually from a Christian background myself. There is really a very little history of Muslim-Christian tension.
But this particular group actually was, at least to some extent, thought to be culpable for violence against Buddhist statues. Is that not true?
Yeah, that's true. It's a very small group, but it's so that is absolutely true. And also, leading Muslim community leaders said 3 years ago they handed over intelligence about this group to the state and said, "Look, these people are quite dangerous." But the vast majority of violence has actually come from very large-scale Buddhist extreme religious monk orders like the Bodhubala Sena against Muslim communities. So this caught us all on the hop. And this, I think there has to be some actor from outside the island involved, because this is not our local story. We have many stories of violence in the island. We have a long history of ethnic tensions. And we feel in some ways that we are now part of a global story and on a global stage for a story that we haven't fully birthed. It doesn't come fully from within our own histories.
Well, your own history involved a pretty long civil war.
Absolutely. And that led to a national security state, which was intensive. So and often violated people's human rights. We have, at the moment, the current leader of the opposition, the former president, at the end of the war, expanded the army rather than demilitarizing it, expanded surveillance, and all kinds of atrocities were committed under his watch. All this year, we've seen mothers of Tamil disappeared calling for for any news about their sons, about those who are dead, who are disappeared. There are so many human rights issues involved with Sri Lanka's national security state that this kind of, we also worry that this sort of event will return us to an era that very few of us want to go back to, which is a state of war.
Our guest on the line here is Sharika Thirangama. She's assistant professor of anthropology at Stanford and also, as she said, a Christian from Sri Lanka. But a lot of these divisions are not necessarily even religious so much as ethnic. I'm looking at a comment from a listener named Nancy who says, articles about Sri Lanka this morning talk about the religious divisions, but are we using religion as a proxy for ethnicity? Yes, we know there are ethnic differences, but by billing the differences as religious, are we promoting further religious divisions?
Yeah, I think that's a good question from your caller, because there are ethnic differences and there are religious differences. So Christian communities span Tamil and Sinhala. Both Tamils and Sinhalese are Christians, Catholics and various denominations. So the Catholic community is the largest. Muslims in Sri Lanka are not only a religious community, they're actually an ethnic community too, with a variety of different religious beliefs within the Muslim community as well. So there is a danger in upscaling this, that's right, and making collapsing ethnic and Muslim divisions. I think the most important thing is that most of us Sri Lankans that I know, we want to mourn across community. We want to mourn for the families who have lost so much in the last few days. And we want to mourn also for our own country, that we fear the violence that could come after this. We fear the reprisals. We fear a return to a situation we don't want. This is a news item globally for 2 days, but we will feel this for a very long time. So we want to grieve across community, across religious and ethnic community, and we have done that. We have endured a 30-year war together, and we have grieved together. There are lots of cleavages in Sri Lanka, but there are also lots of coming together.
I understand the need to grieve, and certainly our thoughts and sympathy are with those who have suffered losses in this. I'm going to give an opportunity for listeners to weigh in here, and if you have some thoughts about the tragedy in Sri Lanka, and we're talking now about probably 290 people who have been killed and about 500 wounded. It's a massive scale tragedy, and there's an ongoing profound fear and ongoing danger in terms of successive tragedy. I'd like to hear from listeners on this, though, and if you have something you'd like to bring into the conversation or ask, you can join us now at our toll-free number. The number to call, 866-733-6786. Join us at that number, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website at kqed.org/forum and post any questions or comments there, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And Professor Thirangama, there's a lot of concern about the fact that social media has been essentially locked down in Sri Lanka in the wake of this tragedy. Your thoughts on that?
Well, there has been mixed concerns. So some people are, of course, concerned because social media is most people, people rely on it for the circulation of news. But actually, I think that the government thought very carefully about shutting it down, because social media has also been responsible for the circulation of all kinds of misinformation and fake news and rumors. And this, we saw this in 2018, where riots against Muslims in Sri Lanka were largely instigated by false messages spread on Facebook and other social media. So actually, I really do understand why there was a decision to take to close it down. I mean, this had an unfortunate effect because a lot of journalists in Sri Lanka also rely on social media, but there was very wild sharing. And one of the issues we've also had, which is not to do with social media, but is also the Indian media and what they circulate on social media. So the Indian media is going through an election cycle right now, and they are circulating all kinds of statements about Sri Lanka. And we feel that, you know, they're using us for the BJP election in India and the Islamophobia in India. So there's also been all these issues about Indian commentators, in fact. Sri Lankan journalists have been pretty disciplined.
Let me bring a caller on, and that's Harry joining us from Lafayette this morning. Harry, welcome. You're on the air.
Yes. My question is a very specific, very particular question, blurring the line between ethnic and religious. From what I see, all the Catholic churches that were hit are in Tamil communities.
The churches that were hit were largely Catholic, weren't they, Professor Tirangama?
Catholic and Tamil.
Yeah, and Tamil. And in fact, the Tamil Tigers were defeated in the last civil war that we alluded to. But can you comment on this, if you would, Sharika Tirangama?
Yes, it's a little complicated because, of course, the Zion Evangelical Church that was hit in Batiklo, we shouldn't forget that. Those were all Tamil worshippers, and many of them who died were children. In both Negambo and Colombo, these are very famous churches that both Sinhalese and Tamils go to. But as it happened, the early morning service is a Tamil service. That is, that it's given in the Tamil language. We do have different services in different languages. Now, that means that overwhelmingly, yes, those who were affected were Tamil, but it wasn't just Tamils. A lot of elderly people go to the early morning service because they can't make it across Mass. So it's a little bit more complicated than that. But yes, that is true that it was a Tamil service that was hit.
And Harry, I thank you for that question. What about the political or ongoing political situation in Sri Lanka, if I could get you to comment on that? The former president actually tried to take over again, didn't he?
Yes, that's right. In collaboration with our current president, the former president last year in October tried to stage a kind of coup and become made the prime minister. Now, the Supreme Court of Sri Lanka ruled that to be completely unconstitutional. And now we're in a very nebulous state where we're waiting for elections to come again. And the former president will no doubt run on a message of being tough on terrorism, and this will propel him towards the election. But this is a very worrying sentiment. This is a president whose family and he stand accused of all kinds of war crimes. His brother Gotabaya Rajapaksa, the former defense secretary, right now is going to be in California, is going to be held up on two charges brought by civil suits against him for war crimes committed under his watch. So these are very dangerous times for us. What this message of terrorism will do is many Sri Lankans want it to bring us together, but it is very worrying that politically it may drive us apart even further.
Do you have any sense of why these warnings were given about 10 days before and nobody acted on them and they were really virtually ignored?
You know, I don't want to speculate wildly. I'm an anthropologist and an academic, not a security analyst. Bear that in mind. I think that possibly that the intelligence services is very used to dealing with very large-scale threats like the LTT. And everybody I know who knows anything about the Tawheed Jamaat thought they were a small, tiny group, insignificant. So that's my best guess. The other problem is the kind of political failure in the government at the moment, with the president and the prime minister at odds with each other.
Here's Richard, who wants to know, is there any connection between the recent bombings and the Tamil War? We actually don't know that at this point, do we?
No, we don't know that, and it would be speculation in some ways to rule it out firmly, but I can say I'm 95% sure that there's no connection between this and the LTT. The LTT, that is the Tamil Tigers, they're gone as a military force.
Another comment question from Jorge, who says, Pompeo now wants to drag the U.S. taxpayer and soldier into this ethnic religious fight within a country on the other side of the world. It is not the U.S.'s fight. We don't need to be involved. Let them work it out. The U.S. response has been somewhat muted, despite Secretary Pompeo. Vice President Pence, for example, said that this, even before this group was this Islamic fanatic group was named, though no one has yet claimed responsibility, Vice President Pence said this is essentially a war against Christianity. We don't know that necessarily, do we? Although, you know, Christian churches were attacked.
No, we don't know that. I don't know if this is a global war against Christianity. There were also hotels attacked as well. I think that one really dangerous thing about this is that if this narrative is perpetuated further, it might just play into the hands of groups who do want to make it a war on Christianity on either side. And, you know, in Sri Lanka, we don't need to be part of this global story.
I was just going to say, though, there have been arrests. What do we know about those who were arrested? Are you up to date on that?
Yeah, there have been up to 25 arrests. I expect the number will go up and up and up. This is very common after an event. People, you know, loads and loads of suspects will be arrested, some released, some kept. You know, this is an ongoing investigation. And I anticipate more and more people will be arrested. It is not clear who those people are. The government has been very careful not to name any names, to keep it to themselves, and to be really careful about what they say. And I think that's really important, because from the outside it may look one way, but from within Sri Lanka, we also know this is because they are worried, as many Sri Lankans are, about retaliatory attacks within the community and people taking their law into their own hand, overcome by grief and mourning maybe. But this country is tense.
Sharika,
so they are really keeping under wraps.
Sharika Thirangama with us again, assistant professor of anthropology at Stanford and a Sri Lankan native. The ongoing sense here is that this will continue in many people's minds, and what can be done really to avert it. And I've got a listener here who wants to know whether the wars in Sri Lanka have been truly religious and ethnic based rather than about environmental resources, land, water, etc.
Well, I think you can find many I work on war and violence. There are always multifaceted answers. There's never a singular answer. But I do think that we can look at the war in Sri Lanka as a war, an ethnic war, an ethnic conflict, but a civil war that was fueled by two military actors. So it's much more complicated. And both the civil war and the ethnic war took in, of course, questions of land and resources and environmental causes. These are all issues, because these are political issues. They're not just inert.
Professor Thirangama, good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Michael.
Sharika Thirangama, assistant professor of anthropology. Her books include In My Mother's House, Civil War in Sri Lanka. When we return, we're going to talk about the closing of Beach Bank of Babylon, and we're also going to talk about coral reefs and the Great Barrier Reef. Stay tuned. I'm Michael Krasny.